Well, that song is a great reminder of the importance. In fact, the entire time we've been here, that reminder of the importance of really our connection with Jesus. I would like you this morning to take your Bibles and turn to John chapter 15. John chapter 15, a very familiar passage, a passage that's going to continue to help shape the framework that we've been talking about over the past few weeks about being what it means to be a disciple. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? And I actually listened to Dave's sermon from last week and was just deeply appreciative of how he talked about the importance of transformation as the direction that we're headed. John 15, if you're using a Pew Bible, it's page 1676. John 15 falls into the framework of the time of Jesus with his disciples at the Last Supper. And as he is headed within hours to arrest and ultimately crucifixion, you can just imagine how much was on his mind that he wanted to say, those last few words that he wanted to get out to his disciples. And as they leave that upper room and are beginning to make their way to the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you did not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know what his master's business, Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command: love each other. Having just returned from our second trip as a couple to Cuauhtémoc, Mexico, we were commenting on how this trip was different. And in fact, I remember being a youth pastor and reminding students when we would go like to church camp or to retreat that this year's retreat will not be like last year's retreat. This year's camp will not be like last year's camp. And when I led missions trips, this year's missions trip, even though we're going to the same place, will not be like last year's. And that proved true for us. This year's was very different than last year's, because this year's was really about connecting with some of the friends and team members that are there with Jason and Jessica. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to those connections. We had lunch last week with Jessica and Jason's pastor's wife, The pastor wasn't feeling well, but his wife came and we had lunch. And by the way, I bought lunch for everybody, five adults and a kid's meal for under $30. I love Mexico. Then later on, another night, we had pizza with some friends of theirs that they've met. And there was connection. There was some immediate connection. The husband of this couple grew up in Kansas. How great is that? In fact, he told me the town he grew up in. I went, oh, you guys have a great semi-pro baseball team. Everybody in Kansas knows about the Liberal BJs. You know, they're a great team. And so we talked about Kansas. And then, connection, he had just bought a brand new smoker. And so, wow, we were able to talk about, and you know, and I was able to give him some recipes at all. Great connection. I don't know how that connection will continue, but I know that if it's going to continue, it'll take some effort. It'll take effort to, we actually just became Facebook friends. It'll take effort to keep connecting through Jason and Jessica, effort to keep connecting through Facebook and other means. Connections are important. We all have connections. Some of us have connections that, as we think back, they've kind of grown apart. You know, you have those friends, don't you, that at one point you were just so tight, you were like thick as thieves, and today you don't even know where they are anymore. You don't know where they've moved to, where they live. Connections take effort. This is a passage about connection. As Jesus was talking to his disciples, he's reminding them that there's an important connection that all of us who claim to follow Christ need to have. As Jesus began, he made a brief statement that to you and me just kind of flows into the passage. But to each of those men listening to him that night was another kind of mind-blowing reality. Jesus says, I am the true vine. For you and me, we're going, well, yeah, okay. But for an Israelite in the first century who had grown up all his life looking at the older scriptures, at the Old Testament scriptures, where he had been taught from places like Psalm 80, verses 7 to 9, that the vine was brought out of Egypt and planted in a new vineyard. When they would think about passages such as Isaiah 5, where God says, my vineyard is no longer producing and I will tear it apart. When they looked at their coinage that came from the period between the Testaments, where in the Maccabean time, the vine was planted and the grapes were planted as images of Israel. All of a sudden, Jesus is saying to them, your nationality is no longer the vine. I am the vine. I'm the true vine, and I'm where your source of life comes from. And Jesus outlines to them what takes place and what needs to happen in their lives. There are several key characters in this. There's the vine dresser we'll talk about in a moment. There's the vine, and there's the branches. And I know sometimes when we've read this passage, we've gotten all up in arms about fruit, and what does it mean to bear fruit, and what does fruit look like, and we'll explain that a little bit. And we've gotten all up in arms about what happened. What do you mean those branches get cut off and burned? Oh no, does this mean I can lose my connection to the vine? There's some things in this passage that are above our pay grade. And that's what Jesus says. He says, the Father is the gardener. So what does the Father do? The Father cuts off, or he lifts up, as another translation, every branch that bears no fruit. We've thought probably a little more about vineyards over the past few weeks than we probably ever did before, as we saw and prayed for and thought about those wildfires in Northern California, and thought about and saw vineyards just destroyed by fire. I don't know much. I am not a gardener. My roommate and I in college used to call our room the Russian front for plants. I think we had one spider plant that survived. So I just have to kind of take my cues from what's here and from what I read. But viticulture, dealing with vines, is a very difficult process. And one of the things that the vine dresser, the gardener has to do is he has to determine, is this branch productive? Is it fruitful? Is there dead wood that needs to be cut back? The gardener does that and he cuts off that diseased wood. There's other branches that have produced and now he cuts them back. He prunes them back so that they will produce even more, so that they will even be more productive. And then sometimes, as we see down at the end, those branches that have been cut off that no longer produce, that are dead wood, that are possibly diseased wood, they're destroyed. And Jesus kind of paints that picture, but then he emphasizes something completely different, connected but different. Did you notice how many times in these 17 verses that we read that the word remain was used? I'll help you. 11. Remain. Remain in me. Remain in me. Remain in the branch. Remain in my love. You see, a branch that is not connected to a vine has no life. A branch that is not connected to a vine receives no nutrients. A branch that is not connected to a vine can produce nothing. Jesus is talking to his disciples, but I think that message carries through the centuries to you and me. And what Jesus wanted them to know and wants you and me to know today is this: a follower of Jesus understands that consistent connection to Jesus is vital. Remain. The word remain means to stay. It means to stay put. It means to stay connected. It means to not move. It means to be in relationship. All of those words are pulled together in that idea, remain. So while the Father is doing the work that is his to prune and to trim and to build the branches, Jesus says the job of the branch is to remain in him. The job of you and me as a Christian is to always remain connected to Jesus. You say, well, how do I do that? Well, you know, some of you know the Sunday school answers, right? Read your Bible and pray. And those are true. You don't minimize that. But I want you to think about friends with whom you are connected. Think about how you keep that connection going. You know, connection happens when we take time to be with someone. You will not connect with someone that you do not spend time with. Connection requires time. Connection requires communication. You do not connect with someone that you don't communicate with. These new connections that we've made, the past couple of days, are going to be connections that will be maintained as communication is maintained. And that communication really needs to be two-way. We reach out to them, and we wait for them to reach back out to us. Or they reach out to us, and they wait for us to reach out back out to them. And some of us, our connection point with Jesus has been one way. We talk, and we ask, and we pray, and Jesus listens, but we never stop to listen to him. And connection is two-way. Jesus said, you need to remain in me. He's the source. He is the source of everything. In fact, a verse that became a life verse for me was John 15:5. I ran across that verse in my freshman year of college at Moody Bible Institute. And you didn't know me back then, but I was pretty impressed with myself. And I'm in Gospel of John class, yawning my way through it because it was a required class. And we get to this point, and I read this verse, and it was like the Lord just kind of slapped me in the face. I am the vine, you are the branch. Don't forget your place. You are a branch. I am a branch. I am not the vine. don't look to me for, you know, yes, I can teach God's word, but your spiritual vitality should come from your connection with Jesus. I am the vine, you are the branch. Branches, if you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from Christ, you and I can do nothing that will have eternal spiritual value. Oh, we can do really good things, and we can do really good works, and we can be really good people, but if we are not connected with Christ, none of that will have eternal value. Jesus says, remain in me. If you do not remain in me, you're going to wither. You're going to dry up. You're going to be empty. What does it mean to remain in Jesus? Well, 1 John chapter 2 gives us an idea. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 6 says, whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did. If I am going to remain in Jesus, if I'm going to be connected to Jesus, if I am going to be transformed by Jesus, then I better understand how Jesus lived. What were the principles that guided him? What were the principles that guided his life? I remember hearing, some of us have heard this all the time. You know, if Jesus were here today, he wouldn't be in the church. He would be down at the local bar hanging out with those people. Yes and no. Jesus hung out with the lowest of the low. I mean, he reached down and he touched lepers that had to call out unclean. On a hot and dry day, he walked up to a well and he spoke to a woman who was an outcast from her own community, and he connected with her. At the same time, it was a synagogue ruler named Jairus who gets named. Most of the people that Jesus helped didn't get named. And he comes running to Jesus in Mark chapter 5 and says, come, my daughter is dying. And Jesus was comfortable going with him, just as comfortable as he was stopping and turning to the woman who had been an outcast, who had been bleeding and had been an experiment of doctors for 12 years. And he touched her and he raised her up. Jesus was comfortable with the low. Jesus was comfortable with the elite. He was able to hang out with both because he showed them grace and love and compassion. Never forget that Jesus reserved his harshest words for people like me, the religious leaders who thought they had it all together. If you want to be like Jesus, live as Jesus did, show grace and compassion and love and understanding to each person that you meet. Jesus was the one that told us, we'll see it again, that we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. Remain in me. Remain in me and remain connected to me. Connect to Jesus through community when we come together on Sundays. We help each other connect to Jesus. Connect to Jesus by learning to read his word, by spending some time in it. Not just to check it off, but by actually letting it impact your life. You see, it's very easy to look at things like reading the Bible as just something to check off your list. It's very easy to say, well, I went to church once this month, and that's good. And so you check it off your list. But that's not what connection is. I will tell you, one of the lowest times in my life spiritually was right near the end of my seminary career. I dug into this book a lot. Studied Hebrew and Greek and exegesis and da-da-da-da-da. And I slipped into the trap of it becoming a textbook and not the words of life. And I had to change. And I had to come back to, these are words that impact me for my daily living. So that's what connection to Jesus is about. We've been talking about it on Sunday nights about prayer. It's not just what I talk to God about. It's taking time and listening, spending time with. You know, Charlene and I sometimes will drive down the road and not say a word to each other. Just enjoy being together. That's something I'm trying in my life. Every morning I take time to try to clear my head, which isn't that hard, to try to clear my head and just not think about anything but, Jesus, I want to spend time in your presence, not trying to listen for some grand revelation, not trying to, you know, hit some lightning bolt moment, just to be. And it really has been a refreshing time. That's connection. Jesus says, remain in me. Remain in me, and my words remain in you. And he says, if you do this, if you remain in me, then you're going to bear fruit. Here's the second thing. A follower of Jesus understands that status quo is unacceptable. See, you can't just kind of plant yourself and say, I'm going to be with Jesus, and I don't want to grow anymore, and I don't want to move anymore. I don't want anything else to change in my life. I'm just going to be with Jesus. I'm going to be right here, and everything's going to be the same. No, it's not going to happen. Because Jesus says, if you remain in me, there's going to be a byproduct. There's going to be fruit. Now, for much of my life, I thought that fruit meant that I would be some kind of evangelist. That fruit always meant somebody praying the prayer and signing on the card, and boom, I have another soul to notch on my belt. And the more I've studied this passage, the more I realize that's not what fruit is at all in this passage. Take a look. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Part of being a fruitful follower of Jesus is one who sees God answering prayer, because when you're connected with Jesus, your prayers will not be selfish. A selfish prayer is, God, give me, and you, whatever you name it, you know, a new car. If you need a new car, that's not a selfish prayer. But if you just want a better car because a new model came out, then that could be a selfish prayer. God, give me the new iPhone 10. I don't know where I'm going to get the $1,000 to pay for it. And I don't believe that that's bad stewardship, because it would really be cool to have one. That's kind of selfish. I've prayed and prayed and prayed for a hole-in-one. God hasn't answered yet. But when you're connected, God works. Tell you one quick story. It's a story that makes me shudder a little bit. For a long time, I had a friend here that we would meet on Fridays, go get coffee and come back to my office. We'd pray together. And he was in a situation where he actually did need a car. He was he was borrowing a car, and the person was coming back, and he had been saving some money, had money and everything. He needed a car. So that day, I remember praying, God, as your kid, I'm just coming to you and asking for my friend. Would you provide him a car today? And God, not that it really matters in the broad scheme of things, but if you could make it a white Volvo, that would just be awesome. And we left it there, and we kind of chuckled about it. He called me at 3:00 that afternoon. Hey, would you like to take me down to Naperville to pick up your answer to prayer? I said, sure. Drove him down to Naperville, where he picked up a white Volvo and drove it for the next several years. And I was like, whoa, you know, that doesn't happen to me, people. I'm going to tell you right now. But you know what? I believe that was because it was a need. It wasn't, the want was there. We threw that in. Because God does that sometimes. God gives you what you need, and then sometimes he goes, oh, and by the way, here's a little extra, so you just know I'm there. Part of fruit is answered prayer. Part of fruit is the fruit of the Spirit. Bearing fruit begins with you and me reflecting the character of the vine to which we are connected. The fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law, Paul writes in Galatians 5:22 and 23. Fruit always resembles or reflects from which it comes. An apple tree bears apples. One of the things that we saw in Cuauhtemoc that we just marvel at are all the orchards. Apples and pears and all around. It's amazing. In fact, the pastor of the church where Bethany and or where Jessica and Jason go, the pastor is also a farmer, also has an orchard. And that day there were baskets of beautiful, bright red bell peppers. We took some and I cut them up and doused them in some olive oil and salt and pepper and grilled them up with our steaks a couple nights later. And they were really good. You know, but that red bell pepper plant is going to produce red bell peppers. Fruit is always reflective of from whence it comes. And so a Christian who's connected to Jesus will bear the fruit that reflects Jesus. That's what fruit is about. So, in fact, if you notice, Jesus said, remain in me, remain in me, remain in me. And then all of a sudden he says, remain in my love. Remain in my love. What's the first characteristics? Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit is love. And so you can't be connected with Jesus and stay status quo. If you're not changing, then something's happening. It's like that branch can't be connected to that vine and not produce fruit. And fruit's not some kind of a checklist. It's just a byproduct of the connection. Jesus said, remain in my love. He said, when you bear fruit, you will show that you're my disciples. And he says this. You say, how do I remain in his love? If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. You see, a follower of Jesus Christ understands that consistent connection to Jesus is vital. A follower of Jesus Christ understands that status quo is unacceptable. Their growth has to happen if you're connected. And a follower of Jesus Christ understands that obedience is necessary. Remain in my love. How do I do that? If you keep my commandments. You say, well, now, Pastor Scott, now you're getting into the big list. I knew it. I knew you were getting there. There's going to be this big list. I can boil, just as probably you can if you think about it, all of the commands down to two. They're really simple to state. Not so simple to follow through. Jesus did it. He said it. You can go to the Gospel of Luke, to the story of the Good Samaritan, and prior to that, the commandments were boiled down into two things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. Love the Lord your God with every fiber of your being. Do you really know what it means to love someone? When you love someone, you pour your life into them. You enjoy them. You listen to them. And in fact, I've even said there's this, I don't know if it's original with me, but I believe there's a difference between judicial obedience and relational obedience. I'm going to drive out later on Geneva Road today. And I'll go 40 when I'm right out here in front of the church. But once I cross Gary, I better drop it down to 35. Because they've changed the speed limit. And they didn't tell us. They just did it. Why do I do that? Because I don't want to get a speeding ticket. That's judicial obedience. Now, yesterday I was at the house and Charlene said, hey, would you go start a load of laundry? We had to clean up all our clothes. I picked up the basket and said, sure. I went down and started a load of laundry. Why did I do that? There were no speeding tickets involved. I do that because I love my wife. That's relational obedience. It's not because I have to, not because she can, well, she could make me. Not because I have to. It's relational obedience. I do it because that's part of our relationship. Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commandments. What are my commandments? Well, love God. Just pour your heart and soul out to God and drink in his love. And then he said, there's a second one. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that story out of Luke is The lawyer who asked Jesus those things is that Luke says he wanted to justify himself, and so he said, who's my neighbor? And you remember the story, right? It's the story of the Good Samaritan. The Jews and the Samaritans absolutely hated each other. And largely it was a racial thing. The Jews didn't like the Samaritans because the Samaritans were half-breeds, and it goes way on back into history. And the Samaritans therefore decided they didn't like the Jews. And here, the priest and the Levite don't have time for somebody who's hurt and injured. And here comes the Samaritan. Not only did he have time, he rescued the man, he bound his wounds, took him to an inn, and we believe he paid for at least 2 weeks of room and board. 2 denarii. 2 weeks of room and board. Someone even said it could be upwards to 21 days to 3 weeks. And I dare say, had the man on the road not been beaten half to death, and had he known that the guy taking care of him was a Samaritan, he probably would have refused the care. You know, there's a very possibility of that. But he didn't have a choice. He needed help. And Jesus said, who was the neighbor? And that passage, the guy that Jesus was talking to couldn't even bring himself to say the word Samaritan, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. You see, every single person that crosses my path, regardless of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, everything, they are my neighbor. And if I am going to bear fruit, and the first characteristic of that fruit is love, then I need to love that person. I actually was reading a book and still working through it. And the author was talking about how he was at a convention. Not a convention that a lot of us would maybe find ourselves out, because it was a convention of Christians who also happened to be gay. And he was there at the convention talking to an individual, and outside of the convention was someone else with a poster and protesting and talking about how God hated the people in the confines of the convention. And the person he was talking to was gay and said, What do I do with that? How do I respond to that? And I thought the author's response was excellent. He goes, you know, in his heart of hearts, that guy out there believes he is doing God's will as much as you do. And somehow we've got to learn to bring the two of you together. Wow. You see, I don't have to agree with my neighbor to love them. I don't have to even like my neighbor to love them. But I ought to be the person who takes the first step of kindness. I ought to be the person who takes the first step of grace. I ought to be the person who takes the first step of compassion. That's what it means to love my neighbor as myself. That's why you try your best to be kind to the person who's just serving you at the counter. You try to be kind to the person. You know, we've had to go through security all this time. Some of you do that way more than we do. You know what? Those security people are just doing their job. And you know, they face cranky people all stinking day long. And yet, if something happens, then all of a sudden we go, well, where was the TSA? How come they weren't doing their job? Well, they were doing their job, but you were yelling at them. Love your neighbors yourself. That is obedience. It's necessary to be obedient. It's not an option to be obedient. If I'm going to bear fruit, it's going to come from obedience. Jesus said, here's why I tell you all these things, verse 11, so that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. You know, when you are living in harmony in relationship, there is a joy that is just indescribable. Jesus says, so love each other as I've loved you. Well, Jesus, how did you love me? Oh, here's the answer, verse 13. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friend. I'm going to really love someone, then I am willing to sacrifice for them without keeping record. Jesus said, you're my friends. I don't call you servants. I'm letting you know what I'm doing. You're my friends. He tells his disciples, and this is a broader theological concept, you did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you may go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. In John chapter 6, Jesus says, no one comes to me unless the Father draws them. I don't get that totally. I thought I made the choice and I prayed, but there's some grand eternal design that says, no, God chose me. God chose you. It was, I think, Dr. Harry Ironside that said salvation is like this great door. And you look at the door and it says, whosoever will may come. And you say, great. And you walk through that door. And then you turn and look back and it says, chosen before the foundation of the world. It's like, wow, I don't know how that works. But now Jesus said, I chose you. So that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. There's that second time, answered prayer. This is my command, Jesus said, love each other. You see, that love isn't just a love that kind of is out there. Jesus said at the end of John 13, this is how everybody will know that you're my disciples, if you love one another. You see, if we don't love one another right here in this room, if we don't care about one another right here in this room, if we kind of live and let live here, then what we show the world is, yeah, Christianity is no more than any other club. You join, you get a few benefits, and, you know, when you're done, you move on. That's why we talk about family and community. It happens right here. If we love each other, we help one another stay connected. And if we stay connected, we help one another bear fruit. And as we bear fruit, we help one another make a difference. Now, we're going to talk next week about the beginning part of what it means to make disciples, because that's what we're to be about. We're to be about making other disciples. But it begins when we here are connected. You say, well, Pastor Scott, that's a whole lot of stuff. You know, go back to our passage in Luke that we dealt with a few weeks ago, chapter 9. If anyone wants to follow me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. This is a daily process. A follower of Christ understands that it's a daily process. It's not a one and done. One of the things I don't like is when someone says, I've been discipled. No, you've not been discipled. You may have had someone work with you for a time, but you're daily being discipled. I think I told you a few weeks ago that Dr. Wilkins asked us every day in class, how is Jesus discipling you today? What is Jesus teaching you today? And as you learn the lessons that Jesus is teaching you today, you deepen your connection with him. And as you deepen your connection with him, you understand the status quo is unacceptable, that there's growth. And you have a list of characteristics. How am I doing at love? Is my joy growing? What about my forbearance? That's what I need to work on. What about kindness? Am I being kind? What about goodness? Am I a good person? Am I following God's goodness? Am I being faithful to the things God has told me to be faithful to? How about gentleness? Okay, I got another one to work on. I've got them all to work on, but that one's way up there. What about self-control? All right, quit already. But you've got this list. You know, you got 9 things. I had a friend say, I'm about 3 for 9 right now. You know, but you've got this list that says, this is what it means to grow. This is what it looks like. How are those characteristics manifesting themselves in your life? How are you doing in loving God and loving others? And then when today's over, you wake up tomorrow and you start all over. It's a daily process. But it's a process that's worth it. Because in the end, you find yourself more deeply connected to Christ. I hope and pray that some of the connections Charlene and I made this last week will continue for a long, long time. I hope that they're not just kind of one and done. I know that you have connections that you have made and you just love reaching out, getting together with those folks. And there, some of them are people that live far away, and maybe you see each other maybe once every couple of years, and it's one of those relationships that you say, wow, it's like we never had any time apart. We just pick up where we left off. And I hope that you can, as you understand the joy of that, you more deeply understand the joy of staying connected with Jesus day by day, letting his word impact your heart in a personal way. Talking to him and listening to him, spending time with him, and then reflecting him as you are connected to the vine, the true vine. Would you stand as we pray?